Thanks for the introduction. I would like to talk to you today about some research that I've been doing together with my colleague Thomas Zimmermann, who is now at Microsoft Research. When you install something like Red Hat, you will probably tend to see it as a big monolithic thing. So you basically, you insert the DVD, you hit install, and you wait for a number of times, and then you finally have Red Hat installed on your computer. But in fact, Red Hat is much more complicated than that. Red Hat, in fact, contains lots of so-called packages that you can also download and install individually. And each of these packages may be vulnerable. So as the package's maintainer, or as the maintainer of a distribution like Red Hat, you may want to know which of these packages should you focus more on. So how do we actually, know that a package is vulnerable? Well, at some point, somebody will find an exploit to one package, and what then happens is that the Red Hat engineers, they get to work and issue a fix, and together with that fix, they issue something that is called a Red Hat Security Advisory, also known as RHSA. And in that security advisory, when you take a look further down, and if you say that if all those packages initially have no known vulnerabilities, and then the scale from blue to red, they get even ever more vulnerable as time progresses, and you take a look at this Red Hat Security Advisory further down, you will see that there is a package name here, and that points to one of those packages, which then gets its status changed from pristine white to, well, kind of vulnerable. And what you can do is you can do that with all the Red Hat security advisories, and you may end up with a picture that looks something like this. So we did that actually for the Red Hat distribution, and this is the distribution that we found. Note, please, that the y-axis is logarithmic. So there's 2/3 of all packages, it's about 2,000 of them, do not have any vulnerabilities at all. There are 3,241 packages in all. And you can also see that some packages really stick out like sore thumbs. For example, the kernel package is the package with absolutely the most recorded vulnerabilities, which is 129. And you can also find a lot of PHP-related packages somewhere in the 50s. So these kind of stick out. So the questions that we want to ask, there are three questions. The first question is, are there any properties of packages that we can find out through by looking at just at the package or at the contents of the package that somehow correlate with vulnerabilities? And also, what we also want to find out is, are there any properties that will increase or decrease the risk of a package having a vulnerability? And the third one is, if I have a package that has no known vulnerabilities, so it has been pristine so far, are there any methods by which I can predict whether a package actually does contain something, I just don't know it? And through our analysis, we come to the conclusions that yes, we can find properties of packages that correlate with vulnerabilities, which are the dependencies of a package. We can also find properties that increase or decrease the risk, which we call the beauties and the beasts, which I will talk about later in this talk. And we can use machine learning to find out whether a package contains unknown vulnerabilities. Why do we look at dependencies? So but first of all, what is a dependency? So when you have a package like Amanda Server, for example, you can't install Amanda Server all by itself. You need lots of other stuff that has to be installed. And for example, Amanda Server, which is a backup program, it's written in C, so it will need the C runtime library. So you will have to install the glibc, the runtime library, before you can install Amanda Server, and this is what we call a dependency. These are not all the dependencies. There's more dependencies to Amanda Server. There are about, well, some 8 or 9 dependencies. And the question is, why do we think that dependencies have something to do with vulnerabilities? Well, first of all, a dependency from a package A to a package B exists because that package A wants to use some of the services that are being offered by package B. And we have a vulnerability in package A, for example, when A is in a what we call an insecure domain. And the domain may, for example, be compilers or games or office applications or, for example, internet browsers. Internet browsers and domains are characterized by having more or less the same dependencies because they will tend to use more or less the same services. All web browsers will want to open sockets, they will want to do graphics and so on. So some domains may be inherently more insecure than others, and this will show itself in the dependencies. Also, if the dependency is insecure, and you fix the dependency, and somehow the fix spills over to the program or to the package that needs that dependency, you will also have a change in A because of a security fix in B. Or it may also be that the dependency is difficult to use securely. For example, there's anecdotal evidence that SSL is quite hard to use in a secure way. So we think that dependencies correlate with vulnerabilities. And here is what the dependency graph of Red Hat actually looks like. It's a ball of string, basically. It's actually the representation where you can see the most. When you use other representations like hierarchical representations, you don't see anything. You have a few isolated packages on the top tier, and then you have a very broad middle tier, and then almost nothing. So how are dependencies distributed among packages? Again, we can make a graph like this. And note that these dependencies are not transitive. So these are just the direct dependencies, the dependencies that are directly needed. So I'm not talking about dependency hell, so not about transitive closures or anything. And what you can see is that you have a number of packages that do not use any, do not have any dependencies that can be installed by themselves, which are usually development packages containing header files, which are just text, so don't need any, don't need anything else. On the other hand, you have a package like KDE Base, which has a staggering 96 dependencies, which means that you need to install 96 packages before you can install, actually can install KDE Base. So to return to our three questions, we want to answer the first two in one go. And so the question we pose is, where does the addition of dependencies significantly increase or decrease the risk of having a vulnerability? In order to answer that question, we need, first of all, a data structure that allows us to answer such a question in an intelligent way, which is a concept lattice. I will come to that. Then we need to, for each transition in that concept lattice, we will compute the change in risk as you go from one node to another. And then we will include only the statistically significant changes. So that's the program for the next few slides. In the beginning, we want to start, we start with all packages. We start with all packages. And in this case, that will mean, if you remember the statistics, 2/3 of which will have no vulnerabilities and 1/3 of the packages will have some vulnerabilities. And then we narrow our focus to those packages that depend on glibc. So that is a subset, will be a subset of all the packages in the top-level node. Also, we may also find that there are packages that depend on KDE libs and, of course, other packages. In the next step, we focus on packages that, for example, depend on glibc and Qt both. And in the next step, also on x11 libs. And there may, because this is not a tree, this is a lattice, there may also be edges like this. So what we have here, and then we can compute the numbers. So this is the data structure that we have. This is called a concept lattice. And then we can there are algorithms that will compute the concept lattice for us if we just shove the dependencies at it. So this is not a problem. Now we compute the risk change. As I said in the beginning, we have about 1/3 of the packages that are vulnerable initially. So overall, 1/3 of the packages are vulnerable. And if I focus only on the packages that depend on glibc, we find that 33.5% are vulnerable. And as you can see, we compute this by analyzing, first of all, how many packages, for every package, how many vulnerabilities does it have, and then on what packages does it depend, and so therefore we can compute these numbers. And more interesting, however, is the second transition from packages that depend on glibc to packages that depend on glibc and Qt, because as you can see, the increase in risk is quite staggering. That's a 43.9% increase in risk if you depend on glibc and Qt versus depending on glibc alone. So what we want to know is this risk change that we have here. This is the risk change when we add Qt as a dependency, only when we know that we already depend on glibc. So what we want to know is this 43.9%, is that statistically significant? And so what we do is we make a statistical test. It's either a chi-square test or a Fisher exact test, for those who want to know. And we include only those changes that are significant with a significant level of 1% or better. And where we don't have a more general context that is also significant for the same dependency. And if the risk goes up, we call that dependency a beast, and when the risk goes down, we call it a beauty, because the risk can go in both directions. And when we actually do this, I can show you here some of the beasts that we found in Red Hat, and the complete list is, of course, in the paper. You will find that 100% of all packages that depend on the OpenOffice.org core package had vulnerabilities. This is in itself quite an interesting number. You will also find that KDE and Qt are among increase the risk of having a vulnerability quite substantially. And these is, as I said, these are statistically significant risks. Keeping that in mind, looking at beauties, that is dependencies that will lower the risk, you will find that GNOME libs will actually lower your risk by about 17.5%. Again, statistically significant. Sorry, it's at the bottom of the slide somewhat, sorry. Of course, I'm not going to give any recommendation whether to use Qt or KDE or GNOME, but the numbers are kind of interesting. So what we've seen here is that there are, in fact, and if there were no statistical dependency, no correlation between vulnerabilities and dependencies, you wouldn't see this effect at all. There would be no or very few statistically significant risk changes if there were no correlation between those. So yes, there are properties that correlate with vulnerabilities, which are the dependencies. And also, there are, in fact, properties that increase or decrease risks, which are, again, which you can find out using the same method, and which we call beauties and beasts. So for the last question, can we predict whether a package that we have contains unknown vulnerabilities? More precisely, what we mean is it possible to predict from knowing the dependencies which packages are vulnerable, which is a classification problem? And also, we will want to know which packages will have the most vulnerabilities, which is a ranking problem. And the way this is usually tackled in machine learning is when you have your data, you have your dependencies and your vulnerabilities, called X and Y, you split them 2 to 1, and you use the 2/3 to train some statistical method, and you get a model. And then you use the lower third that you still have, which is called the testing set, in order to put that into your model, and you get a prediction. And in the last step, you compute what you already know with what your model predicted, and then you can say, see how, and if the more similar they are, the better your method is. And the typical indicators for these, for classification, are called precision and recall. And precision has basically to do with a false positive rate. Recall has to do with a false negative rate. Both are numbers between 0 and 1, and numbers near 1 are better. So we want numbers, we want high numbers near 1. For ranking, we have something that is called the correlation coefficient. And if you have on the left side the actual values and on the right side the predicted values, and you have complete agreement in the ranks, so the ranking on the left is exactly the same as the ranking on the right, you have your correlation coefficient will turn out to be 1. If there's no correlation at all, it will be 0. And if it's exactly the opposite, your correlation coefficient will be -1. And we want, again, we want values near +1, because that will mean that our algorithm actually predicts, or that the ranking that our algorithm predicts is quite good, is in good agreement with what we already know. So first of all, let's look at the classification problem. Let's first take a look at, can we predict whether a package has vulnerabilities? So we divide all the packages that we have into two sets several times. We do that 50 times. And we evaluate it and compute precision and recall for each of those 50 splits that we do. These are random splits. And this is an accepted technique that is always used when machine learning algorithms are evaluated. And we used two different machine learning algorithms. We used something called a support vector machine, and we used decision trees. We used decision trees because decision trees are a lot easier to interpret than the result that you get from a support vector machine. Support vector machine is a lot of magic dust, which is hard to interpret. In the paper, we try to provide such an interpretation also for support vector machines, but as I said, decision trees are easier to see, are easier to understand. And what you can see here is that when you draw circles around those numbers that we get, they don't intersect. And in fact, a statistical test will show you that decision trees are significantly worse than support vector machines at a level of below 0.1%. So it's almost, it's statistically very likely not a product of pure chance. So, and given that, we won't look at decision trees anymore, even though they're nicer, and we will instead only look at support vector machine numbers. And what these numbers show us, that if we make a prediction and say, this package is going to be vulnerable, we are going to be correct about 83% of the time. And on the other hand, when we do predictions, we will get about 65% of all vulnerable packages in our set that we predict as vulnerable. And these numbers are quite good. As I said, the fraction of vulnerable packages to all packages is about 1/3. So if I just make a random guess, I would be correct about 33% of the time. And this 83% here tells us that our method is significantly better than random. Now, if I take a look at the rank correlation coefficient, I can show you here what is called an empirical cumulative distribution. The most important thing is that the median is about 0.58, the median rank correlation, and that means the rank correlation coefficient will be about 0.58, and that is also what statisticians would call a medium to strong correlation. So again, there is empirical evidence here that we actually are significantly better than random. And what you can also see that all the rank correlation coefficients are basically in the band of 0.52 to 0.62, which means it's quite a narrow band. So we're consistent. We are also consistent. Now, this kind of self-evaluation where you have data where you already know the answer and use that to see whether your machine learning algorithm is doing good, it's a standard technique in machine learning circles. But what we really want to know is if that method is able to predict the future. And of course, as you all know, predictions are very hard, especially when they are about the future. So what we did is we took the packages from and the information from the 1st of January 2008, and we predicted which of the packages that had no known vulnerabilities, according to our method, would develop vulnerabilities in the next 9 months. And 9 months later, we looked. And in fact, you can see that I've put down here the top 25 of our predictions, and there are about 2,156 further packages further down, but we don't look at them. They're not in the top 25. And out of those 2,181 packages, 73 became vulnerable in the months following January, in the 9 months following January 1st, 2008. And again, if we had just had if our method were just random, we would get essentially no hits because we would have to pick 73 out of 2,181 and then get the top 25, and we would basically have no hits if that were just random. And what we have is we have 9 hits. Which are reported in the paper, and just before coming to Usenix, we found that another one had a patch published. So we have actually, we do have 10 hits in the top 25, and that's actually quite good. That's a very good result. So what can you do with this kind of information? Well, when you build new applications, you can have limited choice of dependencies. So our recommendation would be to use less risky dependencies. For example, Cyrus SASL turns out to be a beast, so you could use GNU SASL instead. Or you could use GNOME instead of KDE. I said earlier that I wouldn't be making any recommendations, but here I am. But when you maintain existing applications, packages, when you maintain packages, you don't have any choice. You can't really choose dependencies. And it's not going to be any use just adding GNOME as a dependency in order to try to lower your risk. You have to actually do something with it. And if all the dependencies are actually meaningful, then you have very limited choice once the package is there. It's usually not written by you, it's written by somebody else. So, but when you maintain packages, for example, when you're on the Red Hat security team, you should look at packages that have a higher risk according to this method. For example, you should look at KRB5libs and not at gkermit, which is, according to us, not very risky, not very vulnerable. So, to conclude, what we have that vulnerabilities correlate with dependencies. We can also identify dependencies that are particularly risky or particularly non-risky that make your package actually have a lower risk. And we can predict with high precision recall and correlation whether packages that have no known vulnerabilities actually do contain them. And that concludes my talk. Thank you very much. Yes, please. Yeah.
So observation and then a question.
Yeah.
The observation is, I suspect you were doing your analysis based on binary packages as opposed to source packages.
That's right.
And that may have skewed your results because, for example, I believe all of OpenOffice packages are built from a single source package. So whenever someone modifies the source, they release all of the OpenOffice binary RPMs, which is why you got 100%. So I suspect there may be some anomalies in your data that would disappear if you use source packages as opposed to binary packages for your analysis. So that might be that something you want to consider for future work.
Yes, that is very good. Yes.
And the question is, are you making an assumption here, though, that the statistical correlation actually implies causation? You know, for example, maybe there is the, you know, maybe it says something about the carefulness of a programmer that they choose to use one library versus another. And I'm wondering if how strongly you believe that your recommendation would actually result in fewer vulnerabilities.
Okay, so first about the correlation versus causation. Actually, I don't think we make that assumption because what we do is we have a predictive model and we test that model on real data and we find that it successfully predicts stuff. So it's not about...
Right, but the prediction doesn't take into account your making a recommendation, right? Once you make a recommendation, that
it's
might
change.
It's
going to be a feedback. Going to be a feedback loop. Yes, that would be that would have to be the subject of another study. Yes.
Can we go back to the beauty side?
I would rather answer the question.
It's
related to that. The question was also whether that the recommendation or what we find reflects in the care that other programmers may have put into selecting certain libraries, for example, over others. And I'm pretty sure that's that way. It is that way. I'm pretty sure we would find that if we would look into it. And the recommendation is, of course, if the clever programmers use library X, then maybe you should also use library X. So that's basically the rationale for the recommendation then. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to the beauties slide.
The previous one?
The beauties.
Oh, the beauties. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
This is building right on the question between causation and correlation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think it's up there. Right, so, all right, if you look at the first dependency, right? What in the world could depend on X11 server?
Sorry, again?
If you think about what it means to depend on X11 server, it's a local server. We're not talking, so the typical X11 client is not going to depend on this. Well, what are you going to have in there? Guess what? Fonts.
Sorry, again?
Fonts. Server local fonts are going to be depending most likely on server on the server. Right. So sure. Right. So what we're saying in that first line is that if you're a font, yeah, you're not going to have too many problems.
Sorry, I don't understand what you were saying.
I guess what I'm trying to get here is if you actually look at what the dependencies mean.
Yes.
Right. We're going to step right into this causation versus correlation. Depending on server gives you a very good chance that you might be a dumb font file. And then automatically, you're not going to have any security problems. Now, for Gnome, I'm very curious.
Okay.
That's the thing. I think you're going to find a lot of these things. Now, Python, that's perfectly makes sense. Because you depend on Python, it means that you're an interpreted language. It means that you're not susceptible to buffer overflows. Great.
Yeah, but we also have, I must take a look, closer look, but I think Perl was a beast. So that's kind of contradictory.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's actually where I think we need to drill a lot more, because I think you were very courageous to put the consequence of recommending Gnome versus Qt, because you look at the two APIs.
It's definitely with tongue in cheek. It's definitely with tongue in cheek, because I meant it seriously. If you make a recommendation saying don't use Qt, use GNOME instead, that definitely has to be tongue in cheek. This scratches the surface. We don't know yet what causes these effects, but they are real. So it's no way that the empirical evidence is there, and when you run the numbers, you actually get these results. So there is evidence, and why this is there, why these effects happen. We don't really understand, not yet.
If there was, and I know it's very difficult statistically to extract causation from correlation,
yes.
But if there was a way, that would be very, very powerful.
Yes.
But thank you, very, very courageous, like I said.
Thanks.
Did you consider the possibility that maybe packages that have many other packages that depend on them are more likely to be found vulnerable because people are using them more heavily and they will find these vulnerabilities that are not maybe, they're basically more tested.
Yes, actually, we implicitly we did. For example, if you look at this slide, you will find that KDE Base, this package that we've identified, it's right. KDE Base has 14 security advisories, but 96 dependencies, but the kernel has 129, but no dependencies. So it's not the number of dependencies that makes it.
Would you care to comment on a possible negative feedback loop of releasing this information, wherein you have a particularly low apparent vulnerability of packages using dependency on elite package X, wherein now we learn that packages developed with elite package X have very few vulnerabilities because good programmers did that. Now everyone starts using elite package X, and all of a sudden, elite package X is no longer a very good predictor of vulnerabilities.
Yeah. It goes right back to the question about correlation and causation. Of course, just depending on that package doesn't make you less vulnerable. There are definitely other factors here. And this is basically when you just look at the system from the top and don't influence it, you don't meddle with it. As soon as you meddle with it, things will change. That's clear. So, yes, there could be negative feedback loops as well. Yes. I agree.